Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, a Star Wars podcast that is dedicated to exploring the darker, deeper corners, the mysteries of the Star Wars galaxy. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my good friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matthew, how are you doing today?
Mysterious.
Mysterious. Ooh, yeah. Intergalactic man of mystery.
That's right.
I like that.
Thank you. I feel so good about myself right now. I feel like I'm the most interesting man in the universe.
Jedi's my middle name.
I don't drink beer often, but when I do, I make it Dos Equis.
There you go. Exactly. Well, you know what? For today's episode, first and foremost, welcome back, everybody who's been with us. Welcome to the show, everybody who's joining us. And we're actually going to be revisiting a topic that we've hit before. We're picking up with our non-sequential series here. And what it is we're examining the question in the prequel trilogy. If George Lucas had not made the decision to direct all three himself, we had an episode previously where we looked specifically at Attack of the Clones, and we had our picks for who would have been a good director for Attack of the Clones. And we gave our choices and our reasons. And so the next one we're looking at, naturally, is going to be Revenge of the Sith. If George Lucas did not direct Revenge of the Sith, who do we envision could have taken up the mantle of episode three? And so let's just go ahead and kick it right off, Matt. I want to know who immediately rose to the top of your list as you were thinking about this question. Who would you have turned to if you were George Lucas and you had Revenge of the Sith and you knew the story? Who would you have turned to, tapped on the shoulder, and said, I want you to do this?
I did the same thing that I did last time. Wikipedia is wonderful in the sense that it will list every movie that came out in a certain year. And so I went down that list and I looked at movies that jumped out at me, over a year or two before the movie came out, Revenge of the Sith, and the year the movie came out as well, and then the year afterwards, just to see what those people were working on and what movies were coming out and if something, you know, grabbed me. And for me, this might be a very strange choice for some people, but the person who came to mind first was actually Alfonso Cuarón.
Really?
Who directed Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. He had did You Too, Mama Tambien. He's responsible for Children of Men and, of course, Gravity. And the reason that he came to mind was the way that he is able to deal with really complex emotional performances. And especially with You Too, Mama Tambien, it's a very interesting, strange movie. I wouldn't recommend it for most people. It's probably... but just dealing with the raw emotions of what's happening. And then I think he proved in Gravity he can do that as well, taking something that's so big and grandiose and bringing it down to a very human level. And in the end, I think Revenge of the Sith is a very human story.
I agree with you. I think it's an interesting choice. I mean, the very interesting thing to me is I think that it's impossible to judge these directors to make this pick without playing a little bit of, you know, if they had movies come out post Sith, like that's definitely going to play into your thinking process as to whether they would have, been able to do it. So it's like we already can see into the future from 2003 or 2004 when the decision was going to be made. And it, like, right. That even helped inform when we talked with Attack of the Clones when I picked Christopher Nolan.
Well, and I did not mention, but he also directed, and it was very well received, A Little Princess, which he remade, which was a really fantastic movie as well. So, and of course, he also did A Great Expectations. I mean, he's somebody who just, I think, really
wait a minute. Did he do The Great Expectations with Ethan Hawke? Is that The Great Expectations?
Yes,
that
he did.
I hated that movie.
So now I that's one I have not seen on the list.
I hated that movie, he is now disqualified for me. That's a no go, man. I firmly reject him based on that. So
okay, well I mean, also let me put it this way: he's also a producer and was a producer on Pan's Labyrinth, which is a fantastic film. And so I feel like he kind of understands these kind of make-believe worlds very well, but he always about making it about the characters. And again, I think Revenge of the Sith, of all of the prequels, is the one that needs to be most personal. To me, he's the one I think that would have dragged out of Hayden Christensen in a performance like we'd never seen before, something more reminiscent of Shattered Glass or Life is a House, something like that. And I think he would have pulled Portman out of her malaise, and I think he would have taken what Ewan did and just pushed it even a little bit farther, little bit better.
See, the thing is that... that's interesting in and of itself, because I think that the performances, including Christensen's, were terrific in Sith. We've already had an episode, in case anybody's joining us for the first time. Revenge of the Sith is my favorite Star Wars episode, hands down. No question about it. I don't think it could ever be topped. You know, I anxiously await the future to see if it ever could be, but I don't think it can. Given some of the background that you gave there, mentioning Pan's Labyrinth, that actually ties into a name that I have on my list, which is Guillermo del Toro. I would have tapped him because you're sitting there saying, you know, that Cuaron, you know, can grasp these fantastical worlds and that sort of thing. And I think that del Toro, his imagination is so crazy that I almost would long to see what Utapau would have looked like if del Toro had had a chance to sit in on the design meetings, what the Boga would have looked like, if, you know, because he has an incredible visual flair. And again, speaking about the idea that, you know, future stuff can't help but sit there in the back of your brain, Pacific Rim, I think, sits as, regardless of what you thought of that terrific movie, it can sit there always in your brain as somebody who knows how to use effects. Like the effects in that movie and the interaction with the live actors is fantastic.
Let's just not talk about Pacific Rim.
Well,
because we're going to agree to disagree on that one. That's a whole other podcast for a whole other place. We'll just say I completely disagree on that.
Well, simply based on del Toro's work with Pan's Labyrinth, but also with Kronos and some of his other works.
Well, and Hellboy. I mean, he did both Hellboy films. So, and the first Hellboy movie I remember loving, I don't remember liking as much the second one, but it's been a long time since I've seen them. But I agree with you. I think he's a fantastic choice. He's definitely somebody who would have come in and wanted to do a lot more creature characters. I mean, I think it would have looked a lot more like Episode 7 with all of those creatures, because that is his favorite thing to do. And I think he probably could have pulled out some of the performances as well as we've talked about. So no, I think that's a great choice. I really like that call.
Okay. So we've basically got two guys that worked on Pan's Labyrinth. So at least, at the very least, if anybody out there hasn't seen Pan's Labyrinth, regardless of what you think of the movie overall, look at it from a technical standpoint. But I would still say that overall it holds up. It's an uncomfortable movie to watch. I don't think it resolves as well as it could, but be that as it may, we both picked people that worked on that. So who else is going to come in on your list? Who's your number two?
This was a really, I mean, this one may even shock you even more, but for me, I picked Ron Howard as director.
Surprising, but not but not completely, because it kind of makes sense because he and Lucas had worked together before.
Yes, exactly. They'd worked together before, so they probably have a pretty decent relationship. And I really like the way that I'm specifically thinking of Apollo 13 and just how excellent that movie is. Like, it's so good, and it's a movie that has a lot of tension to it. Even though we know how it resolves, a lot like Episode 3, it has a lot of tension. We know how it's going to resolve itself. Yeah. We just don't know exactly how it's all going to play out as we're watching it on screen. So I think that's fantastic. And I think of the complex character work in A Beautiful Mind that he did with Russell Crowe. I think that's fantastic. Of course, he also had did Cinderella Man with him. And the movie, though, that really sold it for me is I loved his film Rush that he did.
I never saw Rush. It's
incredible.
I've heard good things about it.
Incredible. And what I liked about it and why I chose, when I thought of this with him in conjunction, was the idea of these two guys going back and forth with each other.
Right.
That's what that whole movie is about. And so it really brought, I think he could have brought that out with the Obi-Wan Anakin thing going on. I think he's somebody who could have brought a really interesting perspective to Episode 3. And again, to me, I'm always looking at this as somebody who would maybe bring out the performances a little bit more.
That enrages me, but I'm used to hearing that complaint about the movie, even though it's the best one of all seven. And
and you know how I feel about that. I'm not discounting that. All I'm saying is that to me, there are some moments where and you know this from the extras and reading, there are even times when Hayden Christensen himself wanted extra takes.
Yeah, you know, but the thing is, from the behind the scenes stuff, there were times that he got them too.
You know what I'm saying? Sometimes if you're letting an actor do their thing, you know, they will continue to get better and better.
My point is
I think that having that little bit more leeway would have been very freeing for all of the actors and would have brought something out we just didn't get to see. I love Episode 3. You know that. It's my second favorite.
See, for me, though, I don't think that it's the performances so much as that I think that Ron Howard working on it, any of these other directors working on it. I mean, the thing that we can't discount is the story goes a little bit differently. And probably that's why Lucas didn't have other directors come in, is because Kirshner had a say in how the plot developed in Empire Strikes Back. Marquand had a say in how the plot developed in Return of the Jedi. We bring somebody else in, Revenge of the Sith, even a minor change to the storyline, a minor change in focus, can have a major result at the end. Could be good, could be bad. Howard is an interesting pick for me because obviously they had worked together before on Willow, but in terms of a director knowing what Lucas would want in terms of flow and storytelling style, Ronnie Howard was in American Graffiti. So he's been going side by side with Lucas the entire career. And so he knows how to, and if you look at American Graffiti, that is a lot like Sith. Very, it's all parallel storylines, all related to each other, but running independently. So I think that Howard brings a knowledge of how Lucas likes to see that work. That's really great. I like that. My number two would be a little bit of an offbeat choice, I think, and would move us back more toward the Christopher Nolan school of framing and cinematography and pacing. But Michael Mann, like Christopher Nolan, captures my heart most of the time with his film efforts. Manhunter, Last of Mohicans, Heat. Heat shows that he could do a movie. I mean, Manhunter shows it too, where there's a villain, there's a hero, and they're running side by side. They're very similar. They're mirror reflections of each other, and they're going down these parallel paths. I think that he has a wonderful framing sensibility, and I think again projecting into the future. When you look at something like Collateral, he's not afraid to embrace digital technology when it's necessary to get the natural light. He used digital cameras and was comfortable with them and adapted his style to take them into account. Because that's something the director that works on this is going to have to be very open to the idea of how Lucas, the producer, wants to make the movie, which is a lot of virtual abstract environments. And so I think Mann would have slid in there and been comfortable with that.
And I think that's where he probably would have worked out better than Del Toro, who would have wanted to have much more set built. He would have wanted a lot more of that. I think if he could have, he would have pushed for that. He would have pushed for a lot more, you know, creature designs on set instead of being done digitally. I mean, those kind of things would be very interesting.
Well,
and so,
I mean, make no mistake that Mann's movies are very largely, I'm just talking about the type of camera that he used, because I struggle to think of times outside of The Insider where he used digital technology like very, you know, very much in the forefront of things. But I think also that he would adapt. I think that he's on my list. He's the least likely get. He is the least likely person. If Lucas were to go to him and say, I want you to direct episode 3, I think Michael Mann is the least likely to do it. The most likely to say, thanks, Mr. Lucas, I don't want to. So, you know, I'll include that caveat with it. So, but I mean, okay, so what's our common thread? Like, I'm trying to find what our common thread here is. Like, we have Pan's Labyrinth is obviously a touchstone for us. You have Cuaron, I have Del Toro. You have Ron Howard, I have Michael Mann. Both slightly more traditionalist directors. I think Howard edges out Mann, like we said, because he's worked with Lucas before. He knows how Lucas communicates and operates. So who's next on your list? Is there a sort of common thread to your... I want to see if there's a common thread to your directors.
I think this one's just going to destroy people. They're just going to be like, they're either going to call me a freaking idiot, or they are going to be like, oh, that could have been
Hold on. I'm going to write down...
Yeah.
I'm going to write down who I think you're going to pick. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm actually speaking of embracing digital technology. I'm pulling up my iPad right here, and I'm going to write with my finger.
Let's see if you got it right, John. This is riveting stuff. I'm actually kind of excited.
This is, all right, I've written it down. Who's next on your list?
My guess for, and my thought was Mel Gibson.
Oh, no, I was totally wrong. I'll show you this at the end of the show.
Let me see what it was.
No.
Oh, come on, John.
Right. I thought you were going to say this name, Matt.
Zack Snyder, no.
Okay.
No,
I was
Zack
just
Snyder.
Curious.
I was a gambling man there. I personally love Zack Snyder, but no, not my choice. So Mel Gibson at this point had, obviously, he directed Man Without a Face, mm-hmm. Braveheart, of course,
yep.
And Passion of the Christ. And then, of course, after Passion of the Christ and through 2005, he's working on Apocalypto. And just what struck me about him as a director is that he knows epic, you know? I mean, he knows how to do epic, and especially with Braveheart. And so I was thinking about directing the epic that is episode 3 and what he would bring. And I thought, you know, for the fight scenes, the bravado for the character of Anakin, all of that kind of stuff, I could really see that all working for what episode 3 is. And I mean, think about this too. You know, Passion of the Christ, it's the sad story of Christ being turned over by his own people and that turning their back and all that kind of stuff. Apocalypto, it's about the fall of an empire, you know. So all of these things to me, it seems like he had the right milieu at that point in his life, I think, to be able to bring something really interesting and really cool to episode 3.
I don't disagree. I think Gibson's a terrific director, a very talented director, and that's a great choice. Actually kind of puts my next choice to shame in a sense.
Yes.
Because I'm kind of disappointed I didn't think of Gibson. Because he really is a truly, truly gifted director. But my thinking, instead of going for somebody like Gibson, wound up going for somebody, I changed my line of thinking to somebody that would be, I know how this will sound, but it's the only way I can phrase it as somebody who would be a willing vassal for Lucas's vision, and somebody who was also willing to embrace, you know, the new technology and the virtual environments. And so I put my thinking cap on, and this is a guy who I think only has one credit to his name as director, Kerry Conran, who did Sky Captain and The World
yes.
of Tomorrow.
Oh my gosh, I freaking love that movie, John.
And he
freaking love that movie.
And that movie became well known for having all digital environments.
Yes, it did. It was, in fact, it was the first movie to be filmed the way that Lucas filmed.
Right.
And Carrie started doing that in his stinking living room.
Yep.
Legit in his living room.
Yep.
Oh my God, that movie blows my mind every time I watch it to think about what he did. He was a visionary, and Hollywood was not ready for him, and it is so sad because he should be making movies today because he has an incredible imagination.
And I think that is probably why I cued in on him, because he, at this point, Sky Captain comes out in 2004, so it's already in post by the time Lucas has to make his decision. I could very easily see Lucas getting wind of somebody who's willing to work the way he does and say, come on board. You and I, we're of a mind, and mentor him in a sense. So there you go. Kerry Conran would be my pick there.
Well, and did you know that he was actually invited to the, he was actually invited to Lucasfilm, to Skywalker Ranch, to talk to a bunch of people. In fact, Lucas set this up, this meeting with him, with a bunch of other film directors, so he could talk about what he was doing. And
wow.
Really incredible. So George saw this and was really impressed with the work and had him up to the ranch to talk to a bunch of people. Really, really incredible. In fact, if nobody's ever seen Sky Captain The World Tomorrow, freaking drop what you're doing right stinking now and find a copy of it on Blu-ray. It's a beautiful film.
Disclaimer, if you're driving, get home first.
Don't watch it and drive. That would be terrible. but just really, really incredible. And I think it is a shame. It is a crying shame that he did not get the opportunity to go on. In fact, he was slated to direct John Carter of Mars, and he left that project for unknown reasons, and it's frustrating that he never got the opportunity to continue work.
I'm pretty sure that Disney wishes that they had fought a little harder to keep him, given how John Carter turned out.
It is really sad. So he is a fantastic director, and I will say too, watch the extras on there, because mm-hmm. watching how this guy's vision, it was a lot like Lucas in a sense. Like, he had an idea and he worked his fingers to the bone to make it come around.
There you go.
And
that's
so
awesome.
Oh God, I love that. I love, love, love that.
Cool. All right. Well, okay. I'm going to round out my list and then toss it back to you for the final pick. Because my last pick is sort of a dream pick, because I don't think he was working in Hollywood at the time, because the movie I'm about to mention was, I believe, his first film, Tron Legacy. Joseph Kosinski, who's gone on from Tron Legacy to do Oblivion. I think he's a tremendously gifted visual director. I think that his movies are compelling. I think that he has an unbelievable sense of how to use visual effects, and it would have lent itself. But that, again, is sort of like a time travel dream pick, and that's why he's my honorable mentions list. And so I'm going to toss it back to you for the final pick. Who do you have left on your list that we haven't hit yet?
Well, we kind of did this thing last time where we kind of had the off-the-wall kind of crazy random pick.
Yeah.
And for me, that pick was Joe Wright.
Joe Wright, really?
Yeah. Now, I love him as a director personally. I loved Pride and Prejudice. I loved Atonement, which as a book I thought was unfilmable, and yet he made it work. I thought that his work in Anna Karenina was really special, very different, very bold. I will say, unfortunately, Pan, not very good movie. but I yeah, just not a very good movie. But okay, those three films of his, I've yet to see Hannah, which I'd really like to see. But I think that he is a really interesting director who gets into the mind of his characters,
mm-hmm.
and he's able to do big, like Atonement has some war scenes in it that are just spectacular. You know, the way he uses the camera in Pride and Prejudice, I think is fantastic. So I would have loved to have seen that kind of work here in episode three. So for me, I he's kind of my off the wall director that probably would never have even gotten considered, but I love his work. So for the most part, I'd love to have seen him be able to.
Okay. No, I mean that's a good and valid choice. I mean that's, you know, and is there anybody from your episode two list that would have made it that you haven't mentioned? Because I know that one of the people you mentioned for episode two helped a little bit with episode three, as it is.
That is true. Although my choice from my list for episode two, it's not Spielberg. It's actually Sam Mendes.
Oh, okay.
I think that Sam Mendes, if I could bring over from the list, I would have chosen him. I think he would have been fantastic for episode three. It's dark broodingness, the kind of thing that he's brought to the Bond films that he's done, especially the Skyfall. Mm-hmm. I think when I think of Skyfall, I think that's what he could have done there. I also think, you know, of course, Road to Perdition. And I think that film and that, it, you know, like it's just underlying broodingness of everything that's going down there. It's just, I would love to have seen him been able to do. I love Sam Mendes. So, yeah. I think he would have been a great choice. What about you? Was there anybody you can think of from your list from episode two that you would say, you know what? I also think that they would have done a great job with episode three.
You know, Christopher Nolan's always on my dream list. Always, always, always top of mind. But there's actually somebody else that is on my main list that I forgot to mention. That shame on me, because I consider him also, like Michael Mann, very unlikely to have accepted the job. But on my list also would have been Antoine Fuqua, who did Training Day. That's probably the movie that most people know him for. But I think that that movie showing somebody who's going a little bad, who has a very charming personality and a good heart, or seeming to have a good heart. Denzel Washington in that movie does not have a good heart, but somebody who's able to mask his evil while partnered up with somebody who's trying to be good and wholesome and trust and believe in him. I think that would have been an interesting choice. I think somebody that could have handled the emotional aspects of the Obi-Wan Anakin dynamic pretty well. But I mean, just know that my default always is going to be Christopher Nolan, because I think he should direct just about anything.
Hey, I don't think that's bad. You know, I think that, you know, Chris Nolan gets a bad rap for a lot of people, you know, because they feel like he's too cold in his direction. But, you know, when you look at it, the way Star Wars was directed, not necessarily by an actor's director, I think he really could have done it. And to me, I don't see that. I see heart and emotion in his films.
So do I.
So I just don't get that feeling. But I really think he could have pulled it off, and it would have been beautiful.
Yep.
You did mention something that was really interesting, John. You know, Spielberg did actually work on this film and actually directed a part of this movie with
well, he's storyboarded out a part of it.
Yeah, storyboarding out the fight sequence. And so my question for you is, what do you think a Spielberg Star Wars Episode III would have looked like? Do you think it would have looked very similar to what we got?
No. I think Lucas is very much informed by a different... he has a different sense of camera placement and movement than Spielberg ever did. I think I've said this elsewhere, when we've had discussions, but I think that a Spielberg episode 3 looks like a darker version of episode 7. Because I think that if anything, J.J. Abrams is most heavily influenced by Spielberg's directing style. I mean, you look at Super 8,
oh, yeah.
You look at Force Awakens, you look at, there are so many telltale Spielberg fanboy moves, yep, in those movies.
Yes.
Yeah. And even including the Star Trek movies, that and the way he deals with how people react to what's off, mm-hmm, screen and that sort of thing. So I honestly think that episode 3 winds up, in a sense, looking like just a darker episode 7 if Spielberg does it.
Yeah, no, I think that you have a really good point there. I think that one thing that Spielberg has over JJ though is he's a better storyteller. Like, he tells stories better.
Well, you know,
so that's, yeah, that's my personal opinion. So I feel like he would have, I just feel like, you know, it would have turned out.
What I will say is this, is that what Spielberg has, the leg up he has over Abrams in specific, is I think that in terms of how they tell the story, it's very similar. But Spielberg, there's some sort of like little magical dust that he has that
some pixie dust.
Well, his better work very much has more depth to it. Even though it's technically constructed the same way, like Abrams to me is Spielberg when Spielberg is making Close Encounters of the Third Kind or Hook or a movie like that. Whereas Spielberg, when he's firing on all cylinders, which I think he would have seen episode 3 as a challenge to fire on all cylinders and, you know, sort of like a friendly game of one-upmanship with, mm-hmm, George Lucas, I think that you look at his more substantive works like Jaws, which is, you know, the one that everybody goes back to, but even looking at Munich, looking at Raiders of the Lost Ark, those sorts of things, even though they're technically, you know, moving and the camera work is a certain way, there's something a bit deeper than you get with Abrams, even at his best. Except possibly, like, Mission Impossible 3 has some deeper parts to it. I think that, like, in terms of emotional performances, Abrams also touches on it in Episode 7 and in Star Trek 09. He just about gets there, but he's just not Spielberg, at least not yet.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's one thing that Spielberg does have is that he understands how to create those serials characters, you know, but bring them to life, you know, like fully to life, but right, in the way that it comes off as, you know, from the 1940s and 50s, yeah, and the 30s. So I think that's really what he's able to do because he's so in love with that, the way that George is,
right,
and he has great connection with actors. So I feel like there's just something, like you said, yeah, Spielberg has a pixie dust,
yeah,
that just, you know, most other people don't have. So, yeah, I think he would have been, and it would have been really interesting if George had finally just asked Steven to do that. And
well, there would have been a certain, as the French call it, je ne sais quoi. But yeah, if somebody wants to share their je ne sais quoi with you online, Matthew, where can they reach you?
Well, gosh, John, they can reach us all over the place. You can find, of course, our show at thenerdparty.com. You can also find us on iTunes. So check us out on iTunes. Give us a star rating and review. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. And whatever you write, we'll share with everybody else. So give us that star rating review, and we'd love to be able to share it with everybody else, which you've said about the show, and we love your feedback. So thank you so much for listening and caring about the show.
Yeah. Oh,
you know, we do this for you guys.
There aren't words big enough. We, you know, no. Every so often we've rolled out a show where we're like, I don't know, do you think people are really going to go for this? And then, just as an example, the last show, the response we got to the Where Would You Live in the Star Wars Galaxy, I think it caught both Matt and myself a little off guard, where we were like, oh, well, all right, this is something other people have thought about. Yeah. Well, cool. You know,
so we're not the only ones talking about it,
right,
John.
Exactly. So, you know, and in that vein, please feel free, you know, if there's a topic you want to hear us tackle, feel free to share that with us as well. And in that vein, I actually want to go ahead and share with the audience just a reminder to everybody that as part of the Nerd Party Network, we've teamed up with Loot Crate. So if you've ever wanted to try Loot Crate, which is a service that delivers to you on a monthly basis for a subscription fee, a box of goodies, everything from, you know,
cool stuff too.
Yeah.
John.
T-shirts to collectible trinkets to, you know, basically just it's a little box of imagination delivered to you every month. And you can get a discount signing up for your new Loot Crate subscription at lootcrate.com/nerdparty. And you know what? Go ahead, indulge, get the discount, try it out, have some fun with it, and, you know, have some fun and help the network at the same time. So just go on over to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and give it a shot.
Yeah, we'd really appreciate that. We'd love to tell you what you got from Loot Crate over at facebook.com/thenerdparty, or hit us up on Twitter at The Jedi Masters, or of course we've got the Nerd Party Twitter as well. Join Nerd Party. So check us out both places. We love talking to people. Personally, I'm on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm also on the Trek FM network doing a few shows. I do Literary Treks with Dan and Bruce, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek, get a chance to interview the authors about their newest work. I'm on The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. I'm on the 602 Club, which is the general geek show there. We talk about great topics each week. We're having so much fun. You know, before we get out of here, John, I know there are some places that you're online. So let everybody know if they want to talk about anything that we've talked about here, or congratulate you for your wonderful picks for director for episode 3. Where can we find you online?
Well, aside from all of the network stuff, you can find me on Twitter and just about every other social network at Kessel Junkie. And you know, you can actually listen to me over on the Trek FM network on Stage 9 with Mike Schindler, where we examine the non-Trek work of Star Trek creatives, present and future. And you can also find me on a little podcast called Words with Nerds that I co-host with my pal Craig.
Well, John, I think there's only one thing left to say. I think it's time to close negotiations.
Matthew, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.